Speaker!
Order, order.
Mr. Speaker, I seek leave to introduce the Member's Bill in my name to increase New Zealand's refugee quota and for the bill to be set down for the first reading as Member's Order of the Day number one.
Leave is sought for that purpose. Is there any objection?
Yes.
There is objection.
Green Party MP Denise Roche's attempt at the start of the week's sitting on Tuesday to introduce legislation in response to the Syrian refugee crisis may have fallen flat at that first hurdle, with only one voice of dissension needed to block the tabling of any document in the House. But the government's humanitarian response to the refugee crisis was an ongoing theme of the week, featuring in questions to ministers as well as a briefing in the select committee rooms. First, there were questions to the Immigration Minister, Michael Woodhouse, on Tuesday from Greens co-leader James Shaw, who was unsatisfied with the government's announcement the previous day of an emergency intake of 750 Syrian refugees.
Why should the public trust the National Party to increase the refugee quota in a meaningful long-term way when as late as last week they refused to even consider an emergency quota and in the past have lobbied to cut the number of refugees that New Zealand takes?
The Immigration Minister, Michael Woodhouse, said the emergency intake was only part of the government's response.
The member has something of a fixation on the quota and of the number 750. I remind the House that that is one part of the government's humanitarian response, including another 300 places in family reunion, the 250 or so convention refugees that are granted asylum every year, and the emergency places that have been announced this week, in addition to significant other humanitarian contributions. On top of the $15 million that the government had already provided to assist the Turkish government in supporting refugees on their border, another $4.5 million was announced this week. And I think that is a very, very good contribution above the 750.
Mr. Shaw also questioned why the government had blocked the tabling of Denise Roche's members' bill.
If his government has such an open mind, why did he vote down the Green Party's bill and stop public consultation on the refugee quota at select committee?
The Honourable Michael Woodhouse.
Well, Mr. Speaker, while I have no responsibility for either of those things, I am aware that the Foreign Affairs Select Committee is hearing four submissions on that very issue this week.
And that briefing on the current situation for refugees in New Zealand took place on Thursday morning, when the committee heard from several refugee support groups, including the Refugee Council of New Zealand, represented by refugee advocate Tracy Barnett.
The truth is, when our government now says we have no capacity, what you really mean is that you aren't willing to build the capacity. Change that reality and make sure you match your commitment to raising the quota permanently with funding to a sector that has suffered from decades of neglect. The dirty truth is, even if we double the quota to 1,500, still such a paltry number, with our almost 40% population growth and our 75% drop in asylum number arrivals since 9/11, that doubled number will only take us back to what we used to do per capita decades ago.
Ms. Barnett called on Parliament to make a substantial change to the country's refugee resettlement regime.
This committee called the government out to take an urgent look at our refugee quota 3 weeks ago. I applaud that. Lead us. Lead this region. Maybe that is what steered you into politics oh so long ago. You have the incredible privilege to determine what actions will define us. I can't think of a more noble, more clearly humanitarian, moral imperative we can be proud of than that.
Refugee advocate Tracy Barnett speaking to the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee. Also in the committee rooms during the week, Reserve Bank Governor Graham Wheeler briefed the Finance and Expenditure Committee on his announcement on Thursday morning of a drop in the official cash rate, or OCR, which effectively sets banking interest rates.
As you know, we reduced the official cash rate by 25 basis points to 2.75%. A reduction in the OCR is warranted by the softening in the economy and the need to keep future average inflation near the 2% target midpoint. At this stage, some further easing in the OCR seems likely. This will depend on the emerging flow of economic data.
Graham Wheeler also warned the committee of the effects of rising house prices in Auckland.
The house price to income ratio for Auckland is at 9. It's twice that for the rest of the country. And a ratio of 9 puts you in the top 10 most expensive cities in the world. So this is just dangerous territory.
The Reserve Bank Governor's comments on Auckland housing were later the subject of questions in the Chamber from Labor's finance spokesman Grant Robertson to his government counterpart.
Does he stand by his statement that the government has left nothing undone to tackle skyrocketing house prices in Auckland, given the Reserve Bank Governor's call today for more to be done to address the lack of supply in the Auckland housing market?
Stepping in for Finance Minister Bill English was Associate Minister Stephen Joyce.
Well, Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Minister of Finance, if the member's been paying attention, the government is working very hard on the Auckland housing market.
That drew this further question from Grant Robertson.
In light of that answer, was the Reserve Bank Governor wrong when he told the Finance and Expenditure Select Committee less than an hour ago that the Auckland housing market is in dangerous territory?
Stephen Joyce.
Well, Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Minister of Finance, not necessarily at all. And I think it is important for people to understand, if they're buying houses, that actually you can pay too much for a house. And there are risks because although interest rates are very low at the moment, they don't stay low forever and people generally stay paying off their houses for a very long time. So I think it is appropriate for the Reserve Bank Governor to make comments about housing prices in Auckland because people don't want to make the decisions to pay too much.
Later, Green Party finance spokeswoman Julianne Genta questioned the value of having the official cash rate set by a single Reserve Bank Governor.
Does he agree with the Treasury's advice to him that said, quote, the current single decision-maker approach poses risks and that, quote, on balance, we think there would be benefits to moving towards a monetary policy committee in the future?
That question was again fielded by Stephen Joyce, who said he had read the Treasury's advice.
But it is important to note that the New Zealand system has served us very well, I think, over the last 26-odd years.
Back in the committee meeting, Graham Wheeler was quick to point out to Ms Genta that the setting of the official cash rate wasn't his decision alone and was informed by a committee.
So in the end, the decision gets taken by the four governors meeting in a committee, another committee from the separately from the 13. Now, as I said this morning, there hasn't been one example in more than 10 years that I'm aware of, not one example of a decision being taken that was not the majority decision of the 13 that gave advice to the Governor or the Governing Committee. That's how we do it.
Reserve Bank Governor Graham Wheeler explaining the process for the setting of the official cash rate to the Finance and Expenditure Committee. Also making headlines during the week was the shutdown of Kaitaia Airport by a group of protesters unhappy with the provisions of treaty settlement legislation, which was being debated as the House sat in extended hours on Wednesday morning. Speaking on the third reading of the Te Hiku Claims Settlement Bill, Treaty Settlement Negotiations Minister Christopher Finlayson had a typically blunt assessment of the protesters.
There is no place for this kind of oafish behaviour. There are a few miscreants who are doing it. They don't reflect Ngāti Kahu. I hope that the day will come very soon when the miscreants will get lost and Ngāti Kahu negotiators will sit down with the Crown to sort out these arrangements.
Treaty Settlement Negotiations Minister Christopher Finlayson speaking on the Te Hiku Claims Settlement Bill, which along with the Te Kararau Aumaki Claims Settlement Bill, passed its final reading on Wednesday morning. This week, the government also passed the Taxation, Land Information and Offshore Persons Information Bill, which was split into two bills for its final reading and passed with the support of all parties except New Zealand First. That legislation brings into effect the government's budget announcements around the purchase of residential land for speculative profit and requires offshore persons to provide IRD numbers and bank account details when purchasing residential investment properties. Elsewhere in the week, back in question time, opposition criticism of the government's flag referendum continued on Thursday, with questions for the Arts, Culture and Heritage Minister from Labor's Jacinda Ardern.
Was she, as Minister of Arts, Culture and Heritage,
consulted during the flag design process, and she's satisfied with the outcome as one of the responsible ministers.
Fielding that question on Maggie Barry's behalf was her government colleague, Nikki Wagner.
On the behalf of the Minister of Arts, Culture and Heritage, no, I was not consulted during the flag design process, which was deliberately kept at arm's length from ministers to ensure its independence. The flag consideration panel was established to conduct an independent process to engage with New Zealanders about alternative flag designs and to choose four to appear in the ballot paper for the first referendum. Yes, I am satisfied with the outcome. The flag consideration panel has undertaken its work conscientiously and chosen what it considers the four best alternative flag designs.
There was then a series of further questions to the Minister from Jacinda Ardern.
Did she, as Minister for Arts, Culture and Heritage, recommend any designers or artists for the flag consideration panel, and if so, who?
Nikki Wagner.
No. The flag consideration panel included New Zealanders with a variety of backgrounds and areas of expertise, and they took advice from designers.
Jacinda Ardern.
Did she recommend anyone for this flag selection advisory group, a group that included the creative director from Nike? If so, who?
Nikki Wagner.
On behalf of the Minister of Arts, Culture and Heritage, as I'm not the minister concerned, I'm unable to answer that question.
Jacinda Ardern.
What is her response to those who have called for the red peak option to be included in the referendum?
Nikki Wagner.
Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the Minister of Arts, Culture and Heritage, there has been a robust process involving public input, and I'm satisfied with the outcome. Red peak was considered by the panel along with a number of other designs, and the panel made its decision on the final shortlist. I am interested to see that the UMR research poll of 1,000 New Zealanders ranked the red flag 37th out of 40, nearly the worst.
Jacinda Ardern.
Did she consult with the RSA as the minister responsible for World War I commemorations, or indeed anyone else, before she adopted a position in support of the Lockwood option, which she has been wearing as a badge since Monday and hanging in the front of her electorate office?
Outrageous.
Order. The question's been asked. The question's in order.
Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the Minister of Arts, Culture and Heritage, I'm not the minister concerned, so I'm unable to answer that question directly, but I'm very pleased to see that the Labour Party is taking an interest in the referendum, and I hope they will support the right of every New Zealander to have an opinion.
And there was also this question from the ACT Party's leader and sole MP.
David Seymour.
Is the minister concerned that colourblind voters will effectively only have three options to vote for with the current lineup?
The Honourable Nikki Wagner.
No.
This week also saw a round of tributes led by Deputy Prime Minister Bill English to the country's head of state, the Queen, having become the longest-serving British monarch.
Previously, Queen Victoria held that record, reigning for 23,226 days. Well, 63 years and 7 months, Queen Elizabeth surpasses that record today.
A round of well-wishing speeches followed, including one from Labour leader Andrew Little.
For the record, and I don't want to embarrass the Acting Prime Minister on his numbers and his calculations, but for the record, Her Majesty achieves this great milestone at 4:30 tomorrow morning, New Zealand time, which raises an obvious question as why we haven't had legislation in this House allowing Her Majesty's loyal subjects in New Zealand to raise a glass of PIMS on licensed premises at that time so that we can all celebrate the very special occasion. I regard it as an epic fail on the part of the ardent monarchists in this House.
Andrew Little. And now for a preview of the week ahead, here's Leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee.
When the House resumes on the 15th of September, it's the government's intention to progress a number of first readings on the order paper, including the Māori Purposes Bill, the International Finance Agreements Amendment Bill and the Child Protection Sex Offenders Register Bill. Mr. Speaker, Wednesday will be a Members' Day.
Leader of the House, Jerry Brownlee. And the House will also sit in extended hours on Thursday morning to make progress on 4 government notices of motion and 2 government bills. I'm Rhys Lyon reporting for parliamenttoday.co.nz with funding from Parliament.